You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is...
Thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Erica Katz on the show with me today. She has an amazing new book. It's called The Boys Club. And if you are looking for a summer read, this has to be on your list. I love this book so much, Erica. I'm sitting here holding my copy of the hardcover and, pages dog-eared, which I hate to do, but I was walking through the house and just jamming my fingers between pages so I didn't lose my place in this book. I kind of read it all in one long sitting. But anyway, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that introduction. I never get tired of hearing that people are marking up my book. It's so wonderful, so thank you.
I love this book. You know, as a kind of lifelong, or not lifelong, but quite a long-term fan of John Grisham and books like that, I remembered why I kind of fell in love with his writing in reading this book. And not to compare those two, because it's not. There are things in here that remind me of why I love these kinds of books.
Well, that's good company to be in. So please compare away. But yes, I agree. Legal settings in general and the structure that the law provides to fiction is really, really beautiful, I think.
Absolutely. Erica, before we get into all of that great stuff, we begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Oh, gosh. So I think that the dream wasn't quite linear or continuous, but I remember reading Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon when I was in high school, and the acrobatic, lyrical way she created this world for me that was so real, despite my never having seen anything like it growing up in a suburb of New York City. And it all just rang so true to me, and it broke my heart, and it made me laugh, and it sounded like music. And I remember thinking, if I could do that and make anyone feel as beautifully lost as I feel right now in words, that would just be a dream. And it was just that, like a dream that drifted to the back of my mind as I grew older, because practically I couldn't quite wrap my mind around how to make a living being an author. And so I went to law school and became a lawyer. But I think Song of Solomon rocked my world enough to make me want to be an author.
I love that so much. I know a lot of attorneys who either become writers or are writers. There really seems to be a parallel between these two professions. Do you see that at all, or do you make any connection between the two?
So I see it, of course, how you were mentioning just, there's a lot. David Baldacci was an attorney, John Grisham, all of these, a ton of people went to law school. Emily Griffin, who wrote Something Borrowed, that trilogy, was a right. lawyer. And there is certainly overlap. I got to say, having done both, I don't think it's a artistic overlap. I actually found my legal brain and my creative brain to be completely disparate. And I found it really, really difficult to write in the same days I was working. which I realize sounds crazy. So I only wrote when I took vacations for a couple years. I took these vacations and just locked myself away and plugged away in a novel. But I tried initially to wake up early and write, to stay up late and write. And I think two things prevented it. Most practically, being a corporate lawyer in New York City, work doesn't actually start and stop at any given hour. So, you know, you wake up to emails and you sort of go to bed knowing you're missing emails. And I just, like, there was really no way to wake up before work started for me or go to bed after it ended. That's sort of the more practical answer. But I also just, when I did have time during the day, I found that my words weren't as creative or acrobatic as they could have been because I spent my day being so precise and short and pithy in emails because that is what you're trained to do as an attorney, to never mince words and to leave nothing open for interpretation, which is quite the opposite for creative writing. I mean, you sort of, at least like in a novel like mine, you want to plant seeds in the beginning that propel readers forward and maybe not fully explain yourself purposefully. And so I found it really difficult. So I don't think there's an artistic overlap. Like, I don't think all lawyers are great with words. But what I do think is that lawyers are not afraid of daunting amounts of paperwork and tasks. And so maybe just having to read so many long textbooks and write such long papers and just not being afraid of tackling something that seems huge, like a novel, is why lawyers sort of brazenly start to write. I also think that there's this really amazing thing that going to law school and being a lawyer does to the human brain, which is force it to look at things from different angles and all angles honestly, which is something that I don't think a lot of people are trained to do. I would imagine some do it innately, but being able to look at a situation honestly and predict multiple outcomes, as well as see different points of view, which you have to do as a lawyer to figure out maybe what the other side will argue or come back at you with in a negotiation, is this amazingly fungible skill, especially when it comes to writing fiction. I thought it served me really well. So that, being just stupid enough to try something really hard and willing to see things honestly, is I think probably why lawyers become writers.
So you're working as an attorney, as a lawyer, and you're you know, as successful at this. At what point did the, you know, and you described yourself as a lover of books and of stories when you're younger and growing up. At what point did novel writing start tugging at you? And is The Boys Club the first book that you have written, or are you like a lot of writers and, you know, have a desk drawer novel or two? Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan, you'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Noveler, N-O-V-L-R. That's Noveler.
The Boys Club is the first novel I tried to write. Want to grow
as a writer and take your writing to the next level?
I don't mean to make it sound easy. I actually went through this draft.
Pro Writing Aid is a grammar checker, style editor, and writing mentor in one package. Pro Writing Aid will never replace a human editor.
So maybe this is my second attempt at a book.
Rather, it helps you self-edit to a deeper level so that when you send it off to an editor, they will be able to focus on the meat of your writing and not spend their time fixing basic writing
issues. Always sort of said that I wanted to write a book, but I started to really sit down and write less to write a novel. Pro Writing Aid is the only platform that offers world-class grammar and style checking,
combined with more in-depth reports to help you strengthen your writing. Our unique combination of suggestions, articles, videos, and quizzes makes writing fun and interactive. Writing can be grammatically perfect, but still feel awkward and clumsy. Pro Writing Aid searches out elements like repetitiveness, vague wording, sentence-length variation, over-dependence on adverbs, passive voice, over-complicated sentence structures, and so much more. Nothing makes a writer lose credibility faster than spelling and grammar mistakes. Submit clean, error-free writing. Go to ProWritingAid.com and use code HANK20 for 20% off of Pro Writing Aid.
Sorted their thoughts best
Pro
by
Writing
writing them
Aid.
Down.
Check it out today.
To the point where when making a decision, I always make lists. But even more than that, you know, I was that sort of angsty teenager that would write angry letters to my parents that I never sent and put in a I wish I were kidding, but I'm sure my parents have found them and thought they were awful. But yeah, I always wrote everything down. And I sat down and started to write. And the most fascinating thing to me was that my thoughts for the first time in my entire life came out in the form of fiction, right? Granted, it's first person narrative, which is always how I wrote things. But weirdly, these people were not people I knew or saw. The book is total fiction. And in retrospect, I think it makes sense because I was having trouble seeing other people's perspectives. And I think to write well, you need to fully understand other perspectives, at least to make characters believable. And so that's how it came out. And then the first thing I wrote focused on this interoffice affair, where I was super interested in toying with the interoffice politics and power struggles of this character, Alex Vogel. And I thought it was so great while I was writing it. I thought it was brilliant. The next Song of Solomon. And I went back and I read it and it was crap. Like, it was so bad and so flat. And I probably used 10% of it. The characters in that first draft were Alex Vogel and Peter Dunn. And both those characters made it into the boys club, but maybe a fraction of what I wrote. I mean, a fraction of a fraction of what I wrote in that first draft. And I think I learned A, that you should outline, which I did not do because I didn't set out to write a novel. But B, I learned this really, really important lesson, which was don't be afraid to course correct and be honest with yourself about what's working, because it's actually never a waste. I mean, I knew those two characters so well before I sat down to write the Boys Club, because I had basically written a whole other book about them. And I knew their psyche and I knew their weaknesses. And I think that I attribute, I mean, and it's quite bold to say, but I hope you'd agree. I hope everyone would agree. But I think I attribute a little bit of why those characters are seeming to ring true to people to the fact that I basically wrote another book about them that I never used.
That's so funny. Boy, if we could go back to those simple times of 2017 where everything was so crystal clear and...
Oh my gosh. Yeah, little did I know we'd be living in dystopian America when I was talking about a time that I thought was the craziest point in American history of late. But yeah, it felt crazy enough for me to need to be creative. But
oh, absolutely.
I got to tell you, starting my second book during the pandemic is also a way to keep me stable. So working on that now.
I can only imagine. I'm going to ask you about that in a little bit, sure. Because I've been trying to ask authors how they're dealing with this kind of weird time that we're in. But we'll get to that in just a minute. The Boys Club. I love how you kind of uncovered your, you know, the process for how the story began, and it wasn't necessarily a novel to begin with. And I love that. But, you know, as someone who's working on their second book now, and then looking back on the Boys Club, how do stories generally begin for you? Is it a character? Was it Alex Vogel? Did she walk on the scene and then, you know, have to figure out what she's up to? Or you know, is it the thought of a setting of a scene? Is it a plot device? What's that first kernel of a story that comes to you?
Yeah, I think the first two, you nailed it. Not so much plot for me. I think my process is very character and setting driven. So I began to toy. I'm quite let's put it this way. Alex Vogel is far more passive than I am as a human being. So I just started to wonder if someone sort of didn't have my backbone, how they would deal with some very sticky situations in the workplace. And so Alex Vogel was born. I think she's so complicated and she's funny and smart and makes really bad decisions sometimes. And so I fell in love with her in my mind and started to write. And I think setting it in a law firm was integral to the novel, but almost secondary in my mind. I think it was my first book, and everyone always says, write what you know. And on some level, I was going to set this in a law firm regardless, even though I'm not really writing about law firms. I hope you'd agree. I'm just writing about big business and corporate America. And it could have been set anywhere. I come from a family entirely of doctors, and my sister-in-law, who's a surgeon, says this book is so true in a, you know, change the trimmings a bit, but it rings so true to a female in surgery. And so I set it in a law firm, which I think plays a huge part in the book, obviously, but more just because that's what I know. And that's how I could make it realistic. And so I would say primarily it's character driven, but the plot obviously would have been different if it weren't in a law firm. So I start with a character and sort of unwittingly explore different aspects of her personality in different situations. And as I said, I didn't use all those situations, but I sort of write a character and then push her or him as far as possible. And that's how the plot comes. And it's totally secondary. And I don't know if that's right, but I can't change it. I'm not super plot driven. I'm so fascinated by human interactions and psyche. And that that's what fascinates me. And I don't think you can write anything that fascinates other people unless it fascinates you. So I write characters.
Well, and the story really is a story of human nature. And this story would be believable if it were set in a hardware store, you know, much much less a law firm. This is just how humans act toward each other, and totally. which is great because Thank it's you. Believable and kind of scary at the same time.
Yeah, terrifying. I think it's pretty honest, and I think that makes people simultaneously enjoy it and very uncomfortable, which is like as soon as someone says that, it's mission accomplished as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you read the blurb of the book, if you read the outside jacket or the back cover or the inside flap, you get an idea of where the story's going. But what I really appreciate about this book is that Alex Vogel is not perfect. She's not a Mary Sue. She's not. You know, there's a lot going on here, and I'll let you talk about whatever you're comfortable talking about. But could you talk a little bit about crafting the character of Alex and making sure that she's not just completely innocent and perfect throughout this? And, you know, the temptation I would think would be, you know, that our hero, if we want to call her that, you know, could be so unquestionably perfect, but you chose not to make her that way. Could you talk a little bit about building her character and the things that she has to deal with, and maybe some of that, you know, she's guilty of it a little bit. Could you just talk about how you put her into the story?
Sure. Yeah, I think I think the very sort of lofty answer I want to give is that I was having a ton of, I guess it was anxiety listening to stories of the Me Too movement, how people talked about victims and men in particular, how they would point to a woman's sexual history or personality or dress in an effort to sort of, you know, combat any rumors of sexual assault. And I thought it was so wild and also fascinating that anyone would say someone were lying because of something they did in the past, or someone deserves something because of something they had done in the past or their personality. And so I made a very conscious effort very early in writing to make certain that Alex didn't do everything right. Because I think fiction is this really gorgeous vehicle for people to be more comfortable talking about really serious issues. And I find it such a dividing line when there's a real person in the middle of any type of news, let alone any type of legal matter such as sexual assault, if it's a female. People are either terrified of saying anything remotely critical of a victim, or they're just hypercritical to the point where they think that the victim deserves something. And I think when it's a fictitious character, people are far more loose-lipped and liberal. And I love that. I want people to start to talk about these things that they think at all times. And, you know, not to give anything away, but there is an assault in the book. And I think that if you can begin to see how Alex is so messed up at certain points and makes these really poor decisions, that doesn't make anything that happened to her any less believable, primarily because it's fiction and I wrote it. I think that will get people more comfortable seeing that the world is not as black and white as they'd like to think it is, and that people are in their lifetimes and sometimes in the same day, in the same breath, victims and aggressors and sinners and saints. And I hope that every character in the book is super gray and gritty and good and bad, because in real life, you can't compartmentalize people like that. Everyone that I know, you know, and I don't know a ton of really awful people, but everyone I know is good and bad. And that is how I wrote my characters. And so I don't know that I set out to do anything but make Alex very real. And I thank you so much for describing her the way you did, because I get the question about the unlikable narrator a lot, yeah. The unlikable protagonist. And I love her. I mean, she's terrible at some points, but I don't dislike her because of that. And I think that 3-4 years ago, I was so much more judgmental about human beings until I sat down and I wrote this book. And I just find that I've reached this very zen place in my life through my writing. It's been an amazing therapy of sorts, where I see that there is good and bad in everyone. And so while Alex makes some bad decisions, I also feel very sympathetic to her for transgressions committed against her. And also, she does some incredible things in the book to people struggling with depression. And then, you know, for women in general in the workplace, she does amazing things at the end. And so to say she's unlikable, I think is like a little simplistic, to be honest. So that is how I wrote Alex, with the view in mind to just make her real. And I feel really fortunate that I think we're at this inflection point in history where people are ready for real characters and craving an honesty on a very basic level, which is, I hope, what I provide. I mean, there's not very much sugarcoating, I hope you'd agree. everyone does bad things and great things and is funny and awful, and they're people. So I think I set out to be very truthful, and that's how I wrote Alex.
Well, what's really interesting is that not only Alex has a growth curve that we get to watch in the book, and sometimes she's curving out of control, you know, from what we would like for her to do. And we're like, no, Alex, come back over here. Can't you see what's coming? But other characters in the book, it's this interesting thing that you described, that when you're writing, there's a crazy sort of empathy that takes place, that there are characters that are obviously villains and should be, and we should never want to understand why they do what they do. And then you see these systems and the things that have kind of are endemic, that you say, oh, that's how they got to be that person. And yeah, it's a weird thing that happens, that not only, you know, do you have this great arc for your protagonist, but maybe some of the antagonists you get to understand. Not that you take up for them, and not that you excuse them by any mean, but you understand and you get to see some of their character growth as well.
Yeah. And actually, when I first submitted the novel, I think there was even more of that. And HarperCollins was so amazing in letting me write the protagonist I wanted to, when a lot of other publishers thought that she needed to be more perfect. And they were incredible, but they did make me focus on her, which I think is right. I think it propels the novel forward. And I think we touch on other characters, but there was even more of that in other books, because as much as Alex is the vehicle for telling the story, I think you're right. The novel is about systems, right? And how they're flawed. And I hope that I wasn't trying to say how to change them. What I was trying to do is to provide an honest look at how corporate America treats women and minorities with no judgment, in an effort to sort of engender a conversation about how and where things need to change. And I was fully aware that you can't really start a conversation like that unless people are reading your book. And so, you know, I peppered in the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and I hope people love it. And it's a great escape in a really tough time in America. I hope people read it. I hope they devour it. And then I hope they talk about it, right? So that was the point. And yeah, it's a, it was a broad undertaking. And I think you're right. It does focus on Alex, but I hope people talk about the other characters. By the way, I love some of the more ancillary characters in the book. I think they're so interesting. And I hope people talk about them as well. And the systems that force them to behave the way they do.
Absolutely. Erica, we touched on it a minute ago, but, you know, we are in the middle of this crazy pandemic right now. And, you know, for writers, writing can be a very solitary pursuit. And, you know, we don't get a lot of outside input while the drafting is going on. And a lot of time gets spent, you know, behind a closed door with just you and a notebook or your laptop or whatever. But how are you handling this time? And has it I know that you're also a practicing attorney. So, you know, that probably factors into your day to day goings on. But how has this affected your creative process?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually just as an FYI to everyone who sort of is listening to this and thinks that I do it all super well, I stopped practicing and work in a more administrative managerial role in my firm, which has been a lot easier to balance my life and my writing. So like I don't do it all. But I feel very fortunate that my family is healthy. And I think that I have a lack of information, which I think there is in news and in the ether, or at least conflicting information, adds a lot of anxiety. And sure. I think coming from a family of doctors who have their finger on the pulse of what's going on has been really wonderful for me. Back in March, I live in Manhattan. I haven't been in the city consistently in almost 4 months, but I feel lucky that my parents still have the house I grew up in outside of New York. And I got out early and I was aware that this was not going to be a shelter in place for a couple weeks and then back to life as normal. And so I think my expectations were more realistic and therefore I suffered less anxiety than a lot of people around me who thought this was going to be a couple weeks and then it turned into a couple months. And now people are just, you know, I think numb is the new normal. And I feel that I never suffered from at the hands of misinformation. That being said, it's been difficult. I mean, I'm a 35-year-old single woman who had this great life. And now I'm like living with my parents. And it's just such a bizarre existence. And I wish I could say that I threw it all into writing my second book and I had this creative spurt, but I think just in the past month or so, I've been able to write. At first, I was sort of debilitated by scattering thoughts. I think every time I sat down to write, I'd wonder if my dad was going to be exposed to COVID when he went to work, and my dad is over 65. And, you know, I just worried about friends, about family, about half my friends, you know, went home for a little while and then ended up giving up their leases in New York. And I wonder, when am I going to see these people again? My sister just moved to California and she's my best friend. And I saw her basically every day since she graduated college 10 years ago. And now I never see her because I can't fly. I mean, I can fly, but I choose not to. Sure. And so it's been tough. And I don't think that any sort of creative burst came out from this isolated time, but I think I've sort of eased myself into this as the new normal. And I've been writing a lot and it's been super therapeutic and it has nothing to do. I think part of why I love writing and why it's therapeutic this time around, it was quite the opposite for the Boys Club, but this time around, it has nothing to do with coronavirus or someone's life being put on hold. And it's a total mental escape for me. And I have found it really enjoyable to become lost in those words, as I hope people are when they read it. But that's how it's a therapy for me this time around, which is so fascinating because it's very different than it was the first time around, which is me sort of trying to make sense of the world happening around me. This has nothing to do with the world around me this time.
Well, it's going to be really interesting to see what sort of stories come out of this next year.
Absolutely.
And And of course, I think there's going to be probably a glut of dystopian novels.
Oh my gosh, yes, I was just going to say that. And some are going to be amazing. And then I think, unfortunately, the ones published a bit later, people are going to have read that story. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes. But I do think there's going to be some important stories that come out that, from people that are willing to scratch a little deeper, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of, I think, I foresee, like, if I had a crystal ball, I think it would show that there's going to be a lot of, right, like, not just dystopia, but I think there's going to be a lot of focus on science in general versus people who don't want to believe it. I just feel like that's really a theme out there in the ether right now.
Yeah. Well, the new book is called The Boys Club, and it came out yesterday when you're hearing this. There are links to it in the show notes where you can grab a copy in hardback or audiobook or Kindle edition, however you consume books. It's available everywhere. Erica, if people are just learning about you and want to dig into all the great stuff that you do, is there a place online where they can connect with you and follow you?
Yes. So thank you for asking. All my information is on ericakatzbooks.com and Erica A. Katz on Instagram. I check probably every week. I'm not great at social media, but I check my direct messages every week. And anyone trying to write, I didn't know what I was doing. And I made a promise to myself because this editor at Random House named Peter Gethers was so lovely to me and talking me through the process. I told myself I would always respond to anyone asking me about it. So for all you writers out there who have any questions, it might take me a little while, but I'd be so glad to answer any questions you have about my process. Not that I know anything about how you should write or really anything about this world in general, but I'm happy to share my story with you.
Excellent. We're going to put links to all that in the show notes of this episode. Erica, you're working on book two now, is that right?
I am. I just finished half of it, and I learned my lesson, and I outlined the rest, and I hope it sells. We just went to market with it.
Excellent. We can't wait to see what comes of it. And I'm recommending The Boys Club to everyone. This is a phenomenal novel. I love it so much. Thank you. I can't wait to see what comes next. Thank you for taking time to come on the show today.
I hope it's good enough for you to have me back, whatever comes next. This was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writers community. Writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experiences. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be a part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques. Learn from a vast collection of free writing resources. Make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at scribophile.community.